Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I am happy to share with you author Sarah Price. Sarah is a Christian fiction novelist and adult and children's author of over 40 books. Much of her writing focuses on the Anabaptist heritage and the Old Order Amish. Her paternal grandparents were born into an Old Order Mennonite church in Pennsylvania in the early 1900s. And with her Anabaptist upbringing, she was drawn to the amazing culture of the Amish of Lancaster County, where she is heavily involved with numerous Amish communities. Her first book, Fields of Corn, became an Amazon best-selling book in 2010 and became one of the first self-published authors in the genre. Most recently, she has established herself as a more literary author by readapting the Jane Austen books into an Amish setting. She went to Drew University in Madison, New Jersey to study anthropology and holds three other advanced degrees. She is also a member of the AustenAuthors.net, the Authors Guild, Jane Austen Society of North America, and Romance Writers of America. She is married and has two children, Alex and Kat, and they live in Morristown, New Jersey, and from what I understand, with a whole load of animals. And I'm interested to learn more, so let's bring her on. Welcome to the network, Sarah.
What a great bio. I don't know who you were talking about.
I know. I just stole that from Parts and Pieces. How was that?
That was wonderful. Wow. And it's, I'm my mouth just dropped open.
She's like, are you sure you have the right person?
I know. I'm like, wow, I get all that.
Before we got started, I wanted to let you know I have a home in Geauga County. It's the fourth largest Amish community in Ohio.
Yes. Well, that's wonderful. I'm actually heading out that way in October for a book tour. So maybe we can meet up.
Absolutely. Keep me posted on that. I love that.
Yeah.
Yay. Well, 40 books, Sarah, that's a lot of writing. You had the Amish of Lancaster series, the Tomato Patch series, Amish Seasons, the Plain Fame Seasons, and the Amish Classics, the Jane Austen books, plus so many others. I don't know. How do you manage to do this?
Sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I, at the end of the day, I actually can't believe all the different things I've done. I think people who know me very well say I'm the kind of person who finds a 25th hour in every day.
Mm-hmm.
And writing is something that I have done since I was able to hold a pencil in my hand. So it's, I always say it takes 10,000 hours to do anything really well, and I think I've put in more than 10,000 hours. So for me to sit down and write several thousand words in a day is just second nature to me. So, yeah. And, you know, it's funny. You mentioned about Fields of Corn.
Mm-hmm.
That was a book I actually wrote when I was 19 years old.
Oh.
Now, I always say I'm 23 forever, so technically that was 4 years ago.
Not long ago.
But my son just turned 19, so the math doesn't really add up. But I wrote that when I was actually living on an Amish farm, and there was an Amish boy, young man, who I didn't realize it at the time because I was just immersing myself into their culture. He was courting me.
Oh.
Yeah, and I have my parrot is on my shoulder and is adding commentary in the background. And so when I realized it, and actually the parents kind of shooed me off the farm. I'd been renting one of their dotty houses. That's an extra house that they usually have for grandparents. And I said to myself, what if I had courted him? Mm-hmm. And what if something happened? Because, you know, through this, where you eventually get married into this community. And that's the book I wrote. And it's still one of my greatest sellers, and I think people are going to be happy to find out that it is going to be in bookstores for Christmas.
Oh, my. Wow. They say write about what you know.
That's right. That's right. And that's something that, with my writing about the Amish, that I strive for complete accuracy and authentic information about this community of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that when people pick up my book, they need to get immersed in the story but have accurate information.
Yes.
And a lot of people who are, there's a lot of authors out there, and a lot of them are wonderful. But there's also this base of authors, I use that term loosely, who know nothing about the Amish, and they just write these stories, and I think that's very disrespectful, and it does a grave, grave disservice to these wonderful people.
Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned, living in this community, there still is so much confusion, and maybe you can just clarify a bit, because even in your bio, we are referred to Anabaptist, Mennonite, Amish, and I think it just gets confusing. People don't realize what the differences are between that.
Well, the Amish broke off from the Mennonites, and I don't think a lot of people know that.
Mm-hmm.
Their leader, Jacob Ammon, he said that he felt that the Mennonites were not strict enough, which is kind of funny because they're pretty strict. So they broke off, and one of their main differences that they had was about the shunning,
mm-hmm.
and being exposed to worldly things. So the Mennonites and the Amish pretty much focus on the same beliefs and the same living plane, putting God first, God, family, community. Those are their main emphasis. But the Mennonites are more immersed into the real world. I say the real world, meaning, how you and I live, driving cars, going to restaurants, movies, and all that sort of
mm-hmm.
thing. But within the Mennonites, there's different levels and different types of churches. And you have some old order Mennonites who are more strict than some of the new order Amish.
Okay.
That's for confusing.
No, I get it.
Mm-hmm. In Lancaster, there are even old order Mennonites who don't use cars, and they use horse and buggies. Mm-hmm. And they're called the, my Amish friends call them? The blacktop Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
Because their buggies have black tops mm-hmm. instead of the gray tops that the Amish in Lancaster use. So even among themselves, there are differences.
And Anabaptist, just let's talk about that in case folks aren't familiar with that term.
Okay, Anabaptist, and this started so many years ago, and there's a wonderful book based, it started in Europe and Zurich, and I forget the name of this book, I'm going to have to look it up now. But they believe that baptism should be a choice, and the choice comes when you are old enough to make that decision. So it's not that they're anti-baptism, but they're Anabaptist because what they want is they want people to learn the religion and then decide to join. And you can have children in the Amish who say, I don't want to join. And they don't take what they call the kneeling vow. And they won't be shunned because they never took the vow. But if you take the vow and then break it and leave the community or break their rules, that's when you get that shunning coming into play. And, of course, most people know about the Rumspringa, which is when the Amish youth, before they take the kneeling vow, actually go and can run wild, okay? And that's pretty much what it means, the Rumspringa, is, running wild, running around. And they'll go out, and they'll be able to go to movies or take trips. We spent a winter in Belize, part of a winter in Belize last year, not 2017, but the year before, and there were Amish kids there. And they hadn't taken their kneeling vow, so they were out seeing the world. And the Amish believe that these young people need to see the world, experience the world, and then decide. Because if you don't see all these things and experience them, how can you make an informed decision?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have different communities where you have a very high retention rate where the kids do take the kneeling vow. And then you have some that don't. And the parents really feel if a child doesn't take that kneeling vow, they end up, feeling really that they did a poor job raising their children. So it's kind of an insult to the parents,
mm-hmm.
but they will accept that. They will accept the decision because they'd rather them decide not to do it than do it and then decide later on they made a mistake.
Okay, so there's no shunning if the child goes wild and decides, as you say, and decides not to come back. So
There's no shunning, but there's an awful lot of head shaking and people going, "I, what are they doing? These kids." I know there's some craziness. One of the communities in Ohio, they have, ooh, I hear some crazy stories about some of those kids out there. But it's all, you know, and if they get arrested because they're underage drinking or doing bad things, they have to deal with that. But there are no ramifications from the family other than, you know, why did you do something so stupid?
Interesting. Wow, there's just so much to know. But maybe give us a little peek into some of your Amish series books. I would imagine that all of this comes into play as you create your stories.
It does. It does. In fact, the Amish of Lancaster series, each book is really an individual book. They don't have to be read in any particular order. But it focuses on four children from the same family, and they each have different issues that they're facing. I'm sorry. My bird is trying to get in on this. I have to say that my favorite, favorite, favorite series that I could read and reread and reread, and I just love this series, is my Plain Sailing series. That is just, it was such an amazing series. I took such a chance, and I don't know how I pulled it off, but it's basically an Amish girl meets and marries Pitbull. And for anyone who doesn't know who Pitbull is, he's a Cuban rapper, very well known. And I have confess that he also smells really nice because I did meet him and I got a hug and he has great cologne. I'd love to know what it is. But yes, so that was a story that actually I thought when I was teaching in Manhattan. I was a college professor before I started writing full time, and I was crossing the road and I was really mad because Pitbull was performing at the Today Show, and I said to myself, how can I be less than a mile away from this man and I can't meet him? And somebody made a comment. I was on the phone with someone and they said, "Well, hey, maybe you'll luck out and his limo will hit you when you're crossing the street." Boom, there was the idea. And that's the whole premise of this book, is that an Amish girl isn't used to being in New York, and she's in New York returning home from Ohio, and she goes across the street to get a pair of sunglasses, isn't used to all the traffic and the different one ways and this and that. And she gets hit by a limo. And then that's how the romance begins.
Oh my.
And it turned into a six-book series, with several of the books being in Amazon's top 100. Crazy, right? And I actually gave Pitbull two of the books. It was 2, 3 years ago. It was actually the day I found out I had breast cancer, and I didn't care. I'm like, I can still go meet Pitbull tonight.
Oh my.
And the doctor was like, "You're crazy." And, you know, but that's a whole other story. And I went and I was able to give him some of the books, and he was speechless because I imagine not too many fans write best-selling novels about him.
That's quite a story. And I would imagine, you say that the books rose to be one of the top best-selling. I would imagine there's no other book quite in this genre, is there?
No. Well, actually now, a couple of authors, again, using that term loosely, they're trying to do some similar things to it, but no, it was really hard to pull off. I mean, to put an Amish girl in a, you know, very sexy man who is obviously around drinking and drugs and women, and make it work and make the fans, the readers, want more. In fact, I was mentioning about how I had breast cancer. When I actually went in to get my double mastectomy, I was supposed to have the third book in the series out. And obviously, I didn't get it out in time. And I had fans, because I hadn't told them that I had breast cancer, that were like ready to come and burn down my house. I got hate mail because I was late getting that book out.
Oh my
Then when they
God.
Found out, they were like, "Oh," they felt really
Well,
bad.
yeah.
And I felt bad, but you know, that's, you know, kind of how that happened. But my fans, almost every day I get an email asking for more of them. They want Amanda and Alejandro. Amanda and Alejandro. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe there'll be a book seven out there.
That must make you feel so good.
Yeah, it does. And I got to tell you, anyone who reads this book, you can't help but fall in love with these two characters. They both go through some really life-changing events because of each other. And I think that's one of the things I want to do with my book, is change people's lives and give them some sort of inspiration and hope. You know, the world's kind of a yucky place these days. I want them to lose that when they read my books but I also want to be real. I mean, people, even the Amish, have problems. And we can't just pretend that everything is, you know, picnics by a lake or, you know, buggy rides and everything's all perfect. It's not that way.
No, no. And as a successful author, you almost have a duty to perform and to use your talent and your gift to reach out to others and help them.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the reasons that every day I do a live stream on my Facebook. Usually it's around 9:30, just because with all the animals and horses and, you know, I can't quite get my act together before then. And I share pieces of my life, and sometimes I get in trouble with my family. They're like, why did you say that? Or why did you tell people that? And it's, well, because people, you know, they need to hear these mm-hmm. things. They need to be inspired, you know? I mean, I have a son who's in rehab, and, you know, that's something that I talk about. I talk about depression. I talk about my breast cancer. You know, I talk about so many different things because people need to realize that everyone has the same problem.
Right.
And there's hope out there. And there are times where, you know, I can't always put on a smiling face, but I try. I try to live my life the way I want other people to live it. And occasionally some things happen where, you know, you just kind of hang your head for a little bit, but you got to, as I even said today in my live stream, you know, you got to put on your big girl pants and keep right on going,
yep.
doing your things. And, you know, but I think that reaching out to my readers, my fans, you know, I think it helps them. And that's what I can do as part of my calling to leave the world a little better.
Yes. And if we all did that, we would be in better shape.
Yeah, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a bit, because I find this extremely interesting. How did you come up with the idea to readapt the Jane Austen books into an Amish setting? How did that come about?
That actually was an idea from one of my very, very dear friends, fellow writer Erin Brady. And she writes chick lit. And she's just an absolute hilarious person. I love being around her. And she had actually given me this suggestion. And I loved doing it so much, because it was so challenging, and I love challenges. And one of the things I learned through that series is that the Amish are not that different from Regency-era people.
Mm.
There are so many similarities that I never would have put those together. Mm. Never, never. And they are just, you know, it was a wonderful challenge. I enjoyed it. My last one, because the publisher shut down their imprint, but my last one, Newbury Acres, which is the retelling of Northanger Abbey, actually I just found out is getting picked up by a publisher and bookstores hopefully by Christmas. So that's another one that's going to be out there for people. But it was a lot of fun. And I think that the challenge in the time I spent retelling these stories and striving for accuracy and also studying the differences and the similarities made me a better writer.
Mm, for sure. I would imagine. Yes, that was work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a new one coming out in October, which is I'm retelling fairy tales.
Oh.
So I have Beauty and the Beast, which that adaptation, which is Belle. It's the name of the book, Belle. And that comes out, I think, on Halloween, and kind of a strange date for an Amish book to come out. But but it is what it is. And I had more of that. Now I'm working on Cinderella. So I'm retelling Cinderella. Then I've got Snow White. And I hope to go right down through all the different fairy tales that are out there.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You are amazing. You are going to be very inspiring to those who are listening to this. Speaking of inspiration, you also say on your blog that the book, The Faded Photo, let's go there, is a new genre for you that's totally outside of your comfort zone. Tell us about the book and why you wrote that.
Okay. Now, yes. And this comes about for a couple of different reasons. But I guess the main one is, and it's what you said when you know, in your introduction, that I want people to understand that just because I write Amish books that are centered in Amish communities, doesn't make me less of an author. And I think a lot of critics out there do. They say, oh, it's Amish, and they just kind of like poo-poo it. So when my publisher said, why don't you go into some women's fiction, I jumped, and I said, absolutely. And this book came about because of a photograph. It was a photograph that was taken when I was a little girl. There was a woman down the road from us who was dying of breast cancer. I didn't know that at the time, but she wanted to have her last Christmas card taken with me. I don't know why, but she did. She didn't have any children. And when I found the photo, I just, you know, kind of got inspired and said, what could be the backstory behind this woman? So that photograph is the reason for the story. And the story is, and I'm not telling anything out of sequence or giving any anything away, that a woman finds out breast cancer. And like most families, everybody's running in different directions. We have a generation, unfortunately, that's very centered around me, myself, and I. So every time she wanted to tell people, they were too busy. And she kind of gets a little angry and says, you know what, I'm going to go through this by myself, which, of course, we know is not possible. But she does go through a lot of it alone, and she meets up with an older woman and who's also going through chemotherapy. And they develop a friendship. And so it's about that friendship. It's about Frances, who is the protagonist, her struggle to try and, you know, rectify her family, but she can't. And it kind of has this ending that just, you know, grabs some tissues. You know, it's really a pretty powerful ending, and I think a lot of people won't see it coming.
Wow. And at the same time, you're going through your own battle with breast cancer.
Well, I am breast cancer free, I guess. That's what they say, for about 3 years now. And, yeah, so... cancer's not fun, but I actually made it kind of fun because I figured, you know what, you can't do anything about it. It happens. You can't say, why me? I always said, I'm glad it was me because maybe then it's not going to be you. And that's how I felt. And I really, I believe that. I had a really great attitude. In fact, I would go and I would take homemade chicken soup to the other people at the, I call it the chemo cocktail lounge. When I was in the hospital, because I had every complication you could possibly have, I almost died and all sorts of stuff, that I'm in the hospital once for 10 days in isolation. And obviously not that time, another time I was in the hospital for something else. And nurses would come to me and ask me to go talk to other breast cancer women who were hysterical, upset, to try and calm them down.
Wow.
So here I am going through it, comforting other women who are going through it. And that helped me a lot. That helped me a lot, being able to help other people. Here's something that I don't think I mentioned when we were talking earlier, that there is collateral damage with cancer. And people don't understand that it's not just about me, the patient.
Mm-hmm.
My family, my husband and my two children, my family went through so much, and my kids were forgotten.
Yes.
They were really forgotten. You know, I had one person say, oh, I invited her to go to the pool. She didn't want to go to the pool. She's 10 years old. Her mom has breast cancer and is in the hospital for 10 days. You think she wants to go to the pool?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that my daughter literally, she was like 10 at the time or 11. She sat in her room for 6 weeks in the summer. And I have a housekeeper and, you know, God bless her. Is the only reason my kid didn't wither away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her stepdad, my husband, you know, was going through his own things, and you know, but he threw himself into work to forget about it. And my son, as I mentioned earlier, turned to drugs, and we're still dealing with that. But I'm going to tell you what has healed my daughter, and what has healed, or is healing, my son. Horses.
Mm.
Horses healed. And my daughter today is, she just turned 15. She trains wild Mustangs.
Wow.
She goes around the country and performs with them. We just came back from Wisconsin, where she was invited to compete. And she came in second place. She rides without bridle, without saddle. It's called Liberty. And she just does amazing things with these horses. And we're going to Kentucky, we're going to Massachusetts, we're going all over the place later this summer. My son is down at Mending Fences, and that's a rehab in right outside of Ocala, which is like a horse capital of the country.
Yes.
One of them. And they use equine therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, after all of the, you know, insurance makes you go to these stupid places, they're terrible, blah, blah, blah. Finally, I said, you know, enough is enough. I'm going to a place, I don't care, it's out of pocket. I'm sending him to a place that's good and not insurance mandated. In this place, Mending Fences has turned this kid around. He's a man, he's 19, all through the use of horses. Horses heal. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, I have surrounded myself with lots of horses, lots of dogs, because pets have something in them that just make the world just so much more beautiful.
Oh, wow. I love this conversation that we're having. Thank you for bringing up, you know, such personal information. And as you said, you do this on your Facebook every day. Give us that information right now, so as we're talking about it, so folks can mark this down and be sure to head over and listen and watch and learn from you.
Okay. My Facebook, they can just look up Sarah Price Author, and if they know how to do the URL, some people don't, it's Fans of Sarah Price. And that's where every day I go on. I always hated looking at other authors' pages, where everything was, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. And I don't want to be that way. People want to buy my book, they can buy my book. But I want to communicate with them. And I actually, believe it or not, I'm actually kind of a shy person. So it's comfortable for me to talk to people, you know, over the phone or through the live streams and get to know people. Where face-to-face, I really kind of have to, you know, really talk myself into being outgoing. And I am. But it's, you know, I do have a little social anxiety. But I can get on there and I tell people what I believe and how I feel. I definitely stay away, and I've learned, because I've done it a couple times, stay away from politics. You can't go there.
Right.
If you're trying to be nice, you can't do anything about that. Because you'll anger somebody. But besides the politics, I talk about pretty much anything and everything. Because, like I said earlier, I want to share with people. I want to help people. And then if they want to buy my books, great. If not, well, then that's okay. We can still be friends and come watch me in the morning.
You know, I think that's a profound piece of advice, of marketing and promotion advice. So many people do get out there and it's all about, you know, just tweeting about their book nonstop, 24/7. And I think you need to offer and give first so that people feel comfortable with you and appreciate you. And then the sales come from after that.
Yeah, and you're 100% right that I am giving back to anyone who wants me to give to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people will write me emails. One woman sent me like a 10-page letter, handwritten, and, you know, pouring their hearts out. You know, and that to me says I'm helping someone. Yes. If they don't have someone to talk to, they feel that they can talk to me, and I'm here for them.
Oh, you are a beautiful person, and your family sounds beautiful, and just surrounding yourself with the animals. Like 100 horses is just amazing that you've got 100 horses.
Yeah. Some of them are like people, though. They're crazy. They all have their own little personalities.
I understand. Oh, my friends, we wandered around, and I know there's more, but is there anything we missed as we begin to wrap up that you would want to talk about today?
The best thing I can say to people is I hope they follow me on Facebook. I hope that they will come and have morning coffee with me. That's what I call it, my morning coffee. And I hope they might be interested in picking up Faded Photo or in October when Belle comes out. I also have another woman's fiction book called Heavenly Blues coming out. I think that's October 3rd. And that's about drug addiction with nurses. And so touching on some really, you know, heavy topics. And I think when people do read these books, I have beta readers, they just can't believe it. They're like, I don't know how you did it, but I can see myself in this character or that character, because everybody knows somebody who's been addicted to something.
Wow. Patient safety is my wheelhouse. That's where I work and live. So when you talk about drug addiction and nurses, I will look forward to that book coming out.
Well, you just send me the address and I will make sure a copy gets out to you.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Thank you. Well, where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
Okay, well, obviously Amazon, because Amazon is, you know, fantabulous. I love them. And without them, I wouldn't be talking to you, because they started the self-publishing, which is how I got picked up by publishers. I have a website, sarahpriceauthor.com. And, of course, Facebook is my main tool of communication with people.
All right, folks. You absolutely have to head over to sarahpriceauthor.com. And that's Sarah with an H, S-A-R-A-H, priceauthor.com. Sarah, you are a beautiful person. Thank you for sharing you and your heart, your wisdom, your books, and your family with us today.
Thank you for having me on.